Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Right, it's another Egg Chasers Rugby podcast. I'm Tim, JB is right there.
Hello, Tim.
Fresh from the shower, by the look of your hair.
Yeah, exactly right.
Fresh from the shower. And there's young Homer himself, Phil. How you doing?
Hello.
Right, this podcast is a little bonus podcast where we are looking back at the second test of the 2009 Lions series in South Africa. So if you haven't watched that, you can hit pause right now. If you're a Sky customer, you can find it on the Sky On Demand. It was played at the weekend. Maybe you recorded it then and you can watch it, but it is there to watch on demand. Or else, go to twitter.com/rugbypodcast and we will put a link so you can watch the game. So you could hit pause right now, watch the game, brilliant game of rugby, come back and listen to the podcast. Or you might remember it, in which case you can just carry on and listen, whatever you want to do. But this was a great game of rugby.
Yeah, it was. So, just a little bit of background to this game, okay? Well, I say background to the game. It's got nothing to do with the game. A bit of background into me.
That's far more important as well.
Exactly. I was thinking about this podcast. I was thinking, do you know what? I actually went to South Africa to watch this. There's no way that I need to rewatch this game. I know what happened. And I rewatched it and I had no idea what happened. I mean, I don't know what I was doing that day or how drunk I must have been, but I did not remember a single bit of it. So I went from fully intending to mail it in to watching this in great detail. And the more I watched it, the more I realised what a flipping brilliant game it was.
It's so brutal. It's like old school brutality where there was loads of stuff. There's a load of stuff that got called up and spotted by the ref, and there was loads of stuff that just got totally overlooked and totally missed. Well, like, for example, the O'Driscoll hit on Danny Rousseau.
Oh my God!
The ref just waves play on. No, don't need to look at that again. Carry on,
no,
lads.
No HIA and stuff. Just crack on.
I mean, Rousseau did rightly get taken off. Yeah. O'Driscoll went off about. O'Driscoll played on for 5 minutes or so, which seems just mental these days.
Yeah, it is. It's like a different world. There's certain parallels to coronavirus here, which is. You can't imagine that world. We've only been in these... we haven't. It's been nearly 12 years. What's that game? 11 years old now.
11 years old. And I think in some respects, this was like the... In some respects, it's a sweet spot because it was... You can tell... You could watch that game of rugby and if someone said to you... If you ignored the haircuts, if someone said to you this was last year, you could believe it.
Yeah.
But the exponential growth of rugby that we've sort of charted through looking at some of these old games through the 80s and through the 90s, by 2009, there's very little difference between the rugby we see then and the rugby we see now. And, but the brutality,
it is worth to that point, Tim. This is the absolute pinnacle of rugby in 2009. This is the apex of it. You've got the world champions from 2 years previous against the Lions in the defining test match of that tour. So that is the top.
The YouTube header on this is brutal game of rugby or something. Yeah, it's very physical. I mean, it's more physical than I'd like to see at level 8, certainly. I actually didn't think it was that physical. I didn't think it was as physical as Saracens Exeter or Exeter Toulouse would be now.
There were some monstrous collisions. In my mind, part of the physicality is just the the injury toll that it led to for the players. Like,
yeah,
both props go off for the Lions. Both centres go off for the Lions. Danny Rousseau comes onto the field to replace Juwan Smith. And then 5 minutes later, he's taken off and Heinrich Brousseau comes on. And Heinrich Brousseau, in his 10-minute cameo, is one of the best players on the park and actually arguably is one of the contributors to South Africa winning it. But the attrition rate for the players was huge.
Yeah, but it certainly picks up in intensity, doesn't it, second half. I thought the first half was fairly free-flowing, actually. I mean, there was a little bit of niggle, but it wasn't French warfare.
I think in the first half, it was clear that the Lions wanted to get one up and they wanted to right the wrongs from the first test. And I thought they were the more physical team in the first half. They were a far better team in the first half, I think.
Yeah. So I thought about this game and I think, like, you can split it up into, let me get my maths right. Actually, I'm not going to try and do the maths, but if you look at any 5 minute window, right, you could come to a conclusion that either team could have won it. So you look at one five minute window, you go, oh my God, South Africa should have won this by a mile. I can't believe the Lions were still in it. You look at another separate 5 minute window, you think, God, the Lions are battering them. You know, South Africans can't stop them, they're scoring at will. It's just such a topsy-turvy game and you can dice it up in any manner of ways. So the Lions battered the South Africans to start with at scrum time. I think that Smith's decision to play him at tight head is bizarre. It's still bizarre today, actually.
Look back to the first test.
Yeah.
And the first test, the South African scrum, I remember watching the first test in Leeds and I rewatched the highlights of it, having watched this. And the first test was totally defined by the Beast's introduction to test match rugby because he absolutely destroyed Phil Vickery. So at the first test, the Beast and John Schmidt as props looks absolutely inspired. And then second test, when Adam Jones comes in, then
pro, isn't he? It's absolute pro, particularly in that era when you had the hit.
Yes, he was so valuable when you had the hit.
But to go back to John Smith, I mean, he won the World Cup captaining his country at hooker, and here he is in the Lions series against the Lions, winning a series as the tight head prop. I mean, that is phenomenal.
Awesome. It's awesome. Yeah.
That's just ridiculous.
And he can play loose head too, just in case you forgot that. You know, that it's not me in any way saying John Schmidt is a bad player, but I would have thought against the Lions you would have wanted. I mean, I can see him going from hooker and then replacing the tight head at a different time. But to start him at tight head in hindsight, and always hindsight is with 20/20 vision, didn't seem too smart to me.
It's a bloody bold call.
And then you had the kicking. Like, South Africa, really, looking at the penalty count, should have smashed the Lions everywhere just by getting their kicks.
Yeah, and again, that's a difference from the first test. So, Ruben Pienaar, it's good that Francois Pienaar wasn't kicking sticks. Ruben Pienaar, in the first test, kicked exquisitely. Kicked 5 from 6, including some difficult kicks. In this, he missed everything. He missed single shot he had.
Except the touchline conversion at the end. No, was that not was, him? That was Mornay Steyn.
Mornay Steyn?
Of course it was.
So, Ruben Pienaar had 0 from 4, yeah. 0 from 3 or 0 from 4 from that game, including a couple that were 5 yards to the side of the post, like easy regulation kicks. That's another thing that was superb in the first test for them. Terrible in the second test.
Do you know the TV show Casualty? If you've ever watched it in the past, I'm sure you have.
Yes.
Particularly with wives who are anaesthetists, they probably love it. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So an episode of Casualty starts and you get flashed up. Oh, look, there's someone doing a bit of gardening. Oh, look, Warren Gatland's going up his ladder to paint the back of his house. Nothing could happen here. Watching this game was like watching Casualty because I knew what was going to happen at the end.
I tell you what.
It was just impending doom all the way. Oh, no, here comes O'Garo. He's come on. Oh, no.
In terms of, like, writing jobs, there mustn't have been many more fun writing jobs than the guys in charge of writing the opening scenes for Casualty.
That's a fair point.
I mean, you'd have thought at some point you'd run out of ways to injure people, but they must be going through the papers looking for, like, weird, you know, a guy goes on rope swing and impales himself, or there are so many things and so many things that they have to come up with constantly. So, was it 3 deaths or 3 injuries every week?
It's sports day. What's going to get? What's the injury going to be this week? There's shot put, there's hammer, there's javelins.
I reckon they probably employ some high-level criminals just with dark minds.
I wonder if you do it by a bingo. Like, you have 3 different bingo pots. You've got spot, powerful neck. All right, form powerful neck it is.
You're right, though, Tim. It was...
Sorry.
I mean, in that first half, the Lions are going so well. And
O'Gara, up and under. Jack Ferreira. Oh, dear.
Yeah, it was just... It was painful to know what's coming. Even though you're saying, like, 65 minutes or whatever it is, and the Lions are more than a try ahead. Surely you can close it out from here.
30 seconds to go for the draw.
I know.
30 seconds. I mean, I know what's going to happen. Yeah, I still can't imagine how they're going to throw us away.
Well, even... So, South Africa were only ahead for 3 minutes in the whole game. From the Jacques Ferreira try in the corner where he runs over O'Gara and then gets past Phillips and Bow, which was an incredible finish.
It was an amazing finish.
Absolute dominant power finish, that is. But so from the conversion after that, Mornay Stein conversion from the touchline, they're in the lead for 3 minutes until Stephen Jones levels it. And that's it. That's the only time. And then the next time they're in the lead is on the final whistle, when the penalty goes over.
So I've spent a lot of my life, a good portion of it, 12 years nearly, detesting Ronan O'Gara for this. I felt like he ruined my Lions tour. But watching it back, do either of you two feel that maybe people were a bit too harsh on him, given what he was asked to do and given the circumstances that he found himself in?
Well, what was he trying to achieve by an up and under?
Well, let's just go back to the Ferreira try for a start, because he misses the tackle there. Do you blame him for that?
It's a missed tackle. Yeah, it's a missed tackle. It's poor body position and a weak tackle 5 yards out from your own try line.
Also, he's out of position.
So he's playing out of position. Yeah. Oh, well, is he playing out of position? Because I think they actually lined him up at 10 and put Stephen Jones at 12 and Tommy Bowe at 13.
I think Tommy Bowe played 12.
Oh, maybe Bowe 12. But then Stephen Jones 13.
Yeah, who the hell 13 then?
But this was totally broken play. There was about 10 phases before it. So no one's in the right position.
I had a feeling, you know, he was at fullback. But of course, Corney's still on the field too.
Yeah. I think unless they hid him in one of the earlier phases on the wing, but I don't think they did.
But it was a straight up missed tackle, so yeah, you can blame him for that. But
he's tiny.
Ronan O'Gara has achieved some amazing things, and as a coach, I really like the cut of his jib a lot. But I, much like you, JB, I spent a lot of time after this seething at Ronan O'Gara, as lots and lots of people did. He got some heat for this. But what was he trying to achieve with that kick? I don't understand what the upside of it was.
It was such a risky option, because it was a bomb from his own 22.
Yeah.
When one of the most important things was all of his forwards, all of the other players, because of the game, because of the conditions, because of the altitude, everyone around him was absolutely knackered. They just wanted the ball to go out. Every single, like, you can see from the body language of all the players, all the Lions who stood in front of him, like, he's just going to put this out. It's fine. He's just going to put this out.
Or what? at the very least, say, okay, well, let's get territory, because if South Africa make a balls up, we can maybe have a pen, or else they've got to run 80 meters to score. I don't understand what he was. The best case scenario is that he catches it, but outside of that, it's an awful call. Awful decision.
Yeah. What kick you see Dan Bigger do when there's nothing else on and he's kind of, you know, within the tens? It's just kind of a kick to nothing. If you've got a good chase, turn it into 50-50. It's not something you do underneath your sticks in your own 22 with 30 seconds left in a Lions test match decider.
Yeah. In my only defence of Ronan O'Gara is, I do wonder if he should have had a HIA before this, because he about 5 minutes before this, he makes the tackle in midfield. I think it's on PSVs, and he goes down hard. And they never zoom in to him, but next thing you know, he's got a bandage around his head. And And he's forced to carry on because there are no more options left. Everyone is on the pitch. So maybe that kind of clouded his thinking.
Yeah. Well, it's not just the kick, is it? It's then the follow-up and what happens next. And yes, that's where he could have definitely done something a little bit different.
Yes. And that's something that these days all players are taught. Oh, yeah, it could be a red, but the players chasing the kick are just taught, you've got to get off the ground. You cannot go under a ball like that and stay on the ground. Yeah. Because if you're on the ground and the opposite man is in the air, it's not going to end well for your side.
Yeah, so I think we can give him a slight pass on the missed tackle. I think there's missed getting. So I just can't. For a guy who controls the game for a living, the more you think about it, the more crazy it becomes.
Yeah, it's not good. It's such an odd decision.
Is Carney, Rob Carney, the best player on the planet for those 80 minutes?
Probably. Yeah. He was absolutely sensational under the high ball, wasn't he?
There's been anything like it. Yeah. Ever.
Yeah. He part was so solid.
And he was a key part of an incredibly handsome team overall, you've got to say. Because in this, there was your man crush, your rugby man crush, Phil, Tommy Bowe. That's not his man crush. Who is then?
Even know who his man crush is.
Puddles.
No. Paul Wallace. Have you ever met
him? No, David Wallace.
David Wallace.
Yeah, no, I was just about to say, David Wallace, I've worked with him a few times and I've talked about it. He's a man crush. He's an incredible human being.
In Hollywood. That guy should be in Hollywood. He's unbelievable.
Then you had Rob Carney as well. And Mike Phillips.
Yes.
Some handsome chaps in that back line. Well, in that team.
Definitely. The
thing which stands out for me about Carney, this game really kind of highlights how he has, not so much improved, because I don't think you can improve from where he was, but how he has adapted his game. Because if you think about Rob Carney now, you don't think of what he was doing in the Lions tour. You think of someone who is an ultra professional, knows the role of fullback inside out, solid under the high ball. By the way, he was still solid underneath the high ball. But it's amazing how he's changed his game from what it was and how easy it would be. How many players have you seen who burst onto the scene, are incredibly explosive, and then fade? But I think it's a testament that he's actually stuck with it for so long and changed his game appropriately.
Yeah, and has been a model professional for all that time. Has been superb and the cornerstone of the Irish backline and team for so long. But he was sensational. The high balls,
double kick,
the kicks. I mean, his boot, with the one exception, the one thing he did wrong was the attempted drop goal.
Oh yeah, that was a shocker.
Halfway line, but kind of everything he touched in the whole of the rest of the game turned to gold. So why not?
Yeah, exactly. If you're him at that point, you think you could do anything.
Yeah, run through brick walls at that point.
But I love Rob Carney as a fullback because, I mean, you're right to say his game evolved throughout his career, but fundamentally, the one thing that was always the bedrock of his game was he was so solid defensively, positionally, and high ball. I love fullback. I love a fullback with like 30% boring.
Well, yeah.
I you're right. I would trade a little bit of the Minozzi, the Italian fullback, who's got the razzle dazzle, but can be a bit flaky. certainly for an international fullback for a team that I'm going to support, I would definitely trade a little bit of that for a little bit of extra Rob Carney or Ben Smith.
Well, I was amazed he even played. Because, the reason I say that, I remember, I don't know if I mentioned this, I was there. first half. Right? And this is the time when I'm pretty sure there's a very, very good Welsh team. A very good Welsh team. And Lee Byrne was the man. The absolute man. I was devastated to see Rob Carney picked ahead of Lee Byrne because I thought that no one can be better than him.
Yeah. So Lee Byrne was picked for the first test.
Yeah.
Carney came on for Lee Byrne in the first test. You're right. So Wales won the Grand Slam the year before. And Ireland won the Grand Slam that year. So those were the two best teams at the time. And it was interesting to see that although England made the World Cup final 2 years previously, they contributed very few players to this because England were fairly poor at this point in time. They almost fluked a World Cup final, if that is such a thing.
Yeah, that actually...
It's true. It's very true. When you look at other selections... like Luke Fitzgerald over Shane Williams seems odd now when you look back again, hindsight 2020. But I was sort of going, did Luke Fitzgerald really start over Shane Williams? But then the week before, Hugo Monier had started, and Fitzgerald came in for him.
So Hugo missed a couple of very good try scoring opportunities in that first test, and that led to it opening up for Fitzgerald, who again I think was seen more as a stable, solid option.
And of course, the other selection, another guy that came on off the bench, which again I went, what? He came off the bench, but of course this is 11 years ago. But Alan Wynne-Jones was started on the bench.
And once again, this is the advocacy, the importance of a tight headlock, because Alan Wynne-Jones started in the first test. England Lions got battered in the scrum. Therefore, you want 36-year-old, 19 and a half stone lump of a man of Simon Shaw starting as tight headlock. And
man of the series. Didn't he get man of the match in Test 3?
I think Jamie Roberts was man of the series, wasn't he?
Jamie Roberts was.
I think Simon Shaw might have got man of the match in the final test.
Okay.
Jamie Roberts is definitely man of the series.
Yes.
He's 22 at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. 36, my age. In fact, we've got a lot in common, as we are right now. He's just a big lump. His thing's ball carrying still. Exploded ball carrying.
He was very good. He was good all round because they were dropping the restarts onto him and he was solid every time.
Yeah. He was very unfortunate, I think, not to get a lot more caps. A lot more caps. He had Morten Johnson ahead of him.
Beke, Grewcock.
Well, it's not those guys that were about the team. It was bloody Martin Corrie for the World Cup. So the final World Cup spot apparently was a toss-up between Martin Corrie and Simon Shaw. And sadly, he didn't go.
Flexibility of Martin Corrie. Mm. Second row, back row.
On South Africa, for a second, it's quite interesting to watch this one. And South Africa, I think my point is, South Africa have never, ever, in the history of me watching South Africa, ever played a different style. Horrible, horrible, nasty
horrible
forwards. Horrible forward pack. And 9 and 10 that are all about the tactical kicking and steady eddies generally, marshalling the team.
Their pack play... Do you know, like zombie movies, there's two types of zombies. There's the mindless ones and there's the crazy ones. They play like the crazy ones.
Exactly. Exactly. And then they have a little bit of stardust sprinkled in the back line, as well as having some huge men. But that's always how South Africa have ever played.
I know. Let's all be honest now. Who remembers Jacobs in the centre?
AD Jacobs, no.
Yeah.
I was like, who was this guy?
But he had a great game. He really did. He was keeping Jacques Ferry on the bench.
And staying on South Africa, Pierre Spies, best rig ever to step onto a rugby field.
Just, I wish Pierre Spies was better than he was. I always say this, like, he had the potential to be the best eight of all time by some distance. I just don't think he was very good. There you go, I've said it. He was massive. He's an incredible specimen. I think he probably played at... No, hang on. What I'm saying is, not he wasn't very good. He wasn't very good compared to how I expect him to be.
He's got the raw materials to be the best ever, as you just said.
And yeah.
He was a solid international player who never lived up to the potential.
Having raw materials is often a problem. I look at Saudi Arabia, completely oil-reliant, backward sort of society, backwards economy. Why? Because they rely on their naturally gifted natural resources. Same with Pierre Spies. He was too lucky to have all the things that he had, and therefore didn't work as hard as he should have.
Is he like the inverse of Thomas Waldrum?
Yes.
Yes.
He's the inverse of everyone that plays at Exeter Chiefs.
Well, so two of the most talented athletic back rows to ever play the game actually were playing in this game, and neither of them did a single thing. Pierre Spies and Tom Croft. I was just willing for those two to get some open ball running at any point in the game, and it just never happened.
No. Did Stephen Ferris get injured early in the tour? I seem to remember. No, I remember it was him and Tom Croft were the two blindsides, really, weren't they?
He was banned, mate. He got picked, and he got banned because in the final of the Pro 12 or whatever the hell it was, Celtic League or whatever it was called by then, he was caught for gouging. Do you not remember that?
No, you're thinking of Alan Quinlan.
Oh, I am.
Yes, you are thinking of Alan Quinlan.
So I'm just looking. Stephen Ferris was originally selected, but then withdrew because of injury.
Stephen Ferris.
Yeah, very Stephen Ferris. I'm surprised Tom Croft didn't have the same. Yeah. Tom Croft was the replacement for Alan Quinlan, actually.
Just looking at the team, Andres Bakke, he was a guy who I felt never quite became what he should have. Whether that is because he's behind two of the best second rows ever to live, I don't know.
In the modern age, is there a better ever international lock pair than Mayfield and Botha around this era?
The only one that springs to mind is slightly more recently is the New Zealand pair Ritalik and Whitelock.
They're pretty good, aren't they?
They are fairly handy.
Very hard to compare second rows because, look at Kay and Johnson, obviously an awesome pairing for their time. But frankly, you know, an average Premiership second row would take the dinner money off them, though. It's just, you know, it develops so quickly. That said, I still think these two hold up.
I think these two hold up, and I also think that for the reasons we talked about earlier, that by 2009, the professionalism of the game was at a height where we no longer saw this exponential development.
But I
think it's just the balance and the blend of those two. Matt Field as an awesome line-out forward and a ball player, and Bakke's Botha as the most brutal lock, I think, I've ever seen play the game.
Sensational tight head lock.
Yeah.
Bakke's is the epitome of a tight head lock.
Yeah. Do you remember Dean Grayling? I don't know where that name came to mind.
Yes.
The reason I just bring him up is because Tim said the most brutal second row. I thought, oh, I must correct him now. Have a look at some of the highlights from Dean Grayling, who is an absolutely... I guess he never made it because, A, he wasn't as good as Bakke's Botha, and Bakke's Botha was ahead of him. But look at his highlights if you want to watch some brutal second row play.
I'll just
looking at a picture of him. The guy, he looks more like a prop. My God, he's huge.
He's enormous. He's like Mitch Lees, but nastier.
My God, he's a lock. Oh, yeah. My word.
I'm not sure what weight he is, but he's a big old unit.
He looks like a tight head, not a tight head lock, a tight head prop. Wow.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm sure you're right.
Yeah, I'm sure he spent most of his time in France. Oh my God, he's 34.
Although he's listed as a loose head prop.
No, he's definitely a second row. He's 100.
Maybe he's sort of shifted as he's gone through his career.
hang on. And I hope I don't look like an absolute idiot. I'm sure. I'm sure he. edit it out.
You must have been. You must have been thinking about someone else. I'm sure there is a player you're thinking of.
No, it's definitely him. What is it?
But he maybe he just had some brutal highlights that are worth watching anyway.
No, it can't be him because I watched all of his. There must be someone else. Is there another Grayling there? Hmm. We'll come back to that because I'm sure that this guy should be retired now. He's actually. We'll come back to that.
Okay.
Back to the game.
You don't mean AC Grayling, the absolute the guy on Twitter who just goes off. I can imagine you loving his tweets.
No, but he is equally as nasty.
Back to the game.
Yes.
So, two of the three tries from South Africa were nifty backs move, set play, first phase backs move, which brought the wingers in from the blind side winger into the line and caused a bit of confusion in between, well, really in between the Pat and first defender, which was, I think, Luke Wallace on one of the occasions and Stephen Jones on the other.
Yeah, it's disappointing. That, isn't it? I think, I mean, obviously it's 12 years ago, but when they look at the film in the morning, they would have been mortified. But the thing which unstitched them was two first phase plays after everything they went through.
And two first phase plays targeting what's basically a known weakness that you should be aware of, that gap in between the scrum or the line out and the first defender. And both were unbelievably simply executed, and it's equally as surprising or even more surprising that Sean Edwards was the defence coach and you see such basic exploitation.
Who was the coach?
No, Ian McGeachan.
Yeah, I thought it was, because I was going to bring this up at the start. It is quite obviously not a Gatland team.
Jamie Roberts, Gatland ball.
But it wasn't Gatland ball. You mean you watched this, specifically the first half?
No, it wasn't. McGeachan clearly went for the same thing that they went for in 97. And I was thinking about the across the team, that they went for the quicker forwards and the more ball-playing forwards, which they did. With, you know, you had Gethin Jenkins at loose head. Guys like Tom Croft, who was speed across the ground, as we said. And then in the back line, they had, in 97, Scott Gibbs and Jerry Guscott. And big man and a gas man. And they had the perfect little foil for that Robertson O'Driscoll.
Yeah, it is a classic big man and nifty man combination for the centre.
I'm going through 915 Springboks now to try and find the man that I want.
Here's a question for you. Mm-hmm. Francois Steyn. Yeah. So, won two World Cups, won the Lions Tour.
Yep.
Starting at fullback for the Lions Tour. Would have been until this year when I think he's moved back to the Cheetahs, now that he's, 34 or 35. He would have, for a reasonable period of time, been one of the highest paid players in France.
Yeah.
Where does he count in the all-time greats? Because I don't even think he's in the conversation.
You're absolutely right. As you were saying that, he'll be putting it in for one more year to try and, because if he must be the only player to potentially win two World Cups and two Lions series.
Yes, probably.
There can Oz Durant didn't align at the same time where they were playing South Africa. So it's, but that would. You'd have to say put him up there with the greats, or certainly he should be regarded a lot higher than he currently is, because I think your observation is absolutely spot on that he never gets mentioned, least of all by me.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, when he won the World Cup, he was starting in the centres. He started at 15 in this series. I'm sure he's got caps at 10 as well, so he's got the talent to play right across the back line. He's a big, strong boy, very physical, but also an incredible range of skills. Now, I'm not actually saying, I still, even with all that, even with all those like those fundamentals being there, I'm still not sure I would have him in the conversation for any of the positions he's played to be one of the all-time greats, but it's just an interesting observation.
What if he wasn't so amazing at age 19, banging over drop goals from the touchline / halfway line? I mean, at that
10 yards inside his own half.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was such an incredible debut. He could never keep up with that.
I do wonder, when I was thinking about this myself, I do wonder if that ability to play across multiple positions means that he's never really cemented a full starting spot in any of them.
That would be another point I'd make, definitely.
Which is the old Henry Slade or Austin Healy type problem.
Equally, it could be part of the reason why he's a two-time World Cup winner, because he might not have been the best in any one position, but the fact he can actually operate in multiple makes him ideal for a squad.
A squad of 31.
But that said, like you've pointed out, he started in World Cups at...
Yeah, he started in the first World Cup in 2007. He was more of a squad player in 2019, but he also started in a different position, was first choice in a different position in the successful Lions test.
It's a phenomenal career. And you're right to point out that you should get more respect for it, because there are every other player that's won two World Cups, and there's not many.
There are not many.
They're all in the conversation.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
It's a good point. How are you getting on, JB?
I'm on player 711.
Maris Pubert. I'll just say this, Adidas rugby stash is great.
Which one?
Adidas in general. I love Adidas and the Lions, just works. I don't know who's doing the Lions kit next year, actually.
Umbro. I like Sergio Ciccini to do it.
Nice. Feeler, if we're going to go for retro, with Umbro coming in, if we're going to go for retro, Feeler would be quite a cool retro one.
Yeah, anything that Danny Dyer wears.
Have you been watching certain programs on Netflix, JB?
I have, actually. I've just started out White Lines.
Oh, I've heard very mixed reviews about that. The acting a bit dodgy, apparently, but is it good?
Garbage. Yeah. I mean, it is so bad. It's monumentally bad acting. The storyline's fairly amusing. It's kind of entertaining, a little bit funny in places. The only reason it stands on its own two feet is because the Spanish actors are good. Or maybe they're bad, but I don't know because they're in Spanish.
But there you go, another reason to watch Better Call Saul. If you just want a great show with some Spanish actors in it, get Better Call Saul on. JB, you need to watch this thing.
Yeah, I've seen the first series. I will, as soon as I've finished White Lions, because I'm guaranteeing you, there's not going to be a second series. So
you go all in. When you start watching something, you see it through, even if you think it's not very good.
No, far from it. I watched the first series, and then we'll see. I mean, I'll give you an example. I really enjoyed Breaking Bad, but it's just so long. In the end, I read the last three episodes on Wikipedia.
That is a disgrace. That is an absolute disgrace. It's one of the all-time best pieces of television.
Okay, this is great. Watch. I know when I get bored, I start fast forwarding through, like doing the bits of dead time where they're just getting a bit of atmosphere. So 10 seconds, 10 seconds, 10 seconds. So when you get to that point, you just don't bother.
And The Last Dance, the last two episodes of The Last Dance, have you nailed them today?
Not yet. I'm saving them for special occasion.
I'm on episode 5, I think. Loving it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm down to Dick Muir now, and I'm gonna give up on this. I'll look for him when we're not doing a podcast.
Sensible.
I look forward to it. No, what started? I don't know how we got off onto that tangent, but Adidas and rugby kit, I love. The French kits in the 80s were great, and there's just something about the Lions jerseys with the Adidas three stripes that I just like. The three stripes around the top of the socks, the three stripes down the side of the shorts.
Yeah, it is a good look. I wonder—is it the memories attached to that look?
Possibly the 97 thing when.
Yeah. So it's only fair that I tell you where I watched this game, because I don't know if I mentioned it. I was there at the time.
And, in South Africa.
So I went to watch the first test.
Where was the first test?
Durban.
Okay, yeah.
We had one of the best times ever going around South Africa. There's a bunch of lads who were between, I don't know, the youngest must have been 19, the oldest must have been 28, 30. Hired a couple of minibuses. What a couple of weeks. Some of the lads did actually go to this test. And when they went there, they said the Lions were practicing their lineouts in the car park in their flip-flops, which is a nice little detail for you. So the fans gathered around and watched them practice their lineouts.
Great way to break an ankle.
Yes.
I think that's a fairly standard thing that teams do, because in the All Blacks documentary series we covered, there's a couple of times when they're in just out the back of the hotel on a bit of tarmac just doing some walkthroughs of lineouts.
Yeah, and also, don't the Barbarians often train in the park?
That's a done thing. They do train in the park.
So, yeah, you can do it. I watched this in Sun City Casino, which is a great place to go. And I know I've mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again. I won tickets to go to an R. Kelly concert, which I showed up. And I was the only white guy in the entire... It wasn't even a concert. It was the after party, the R. Kelly after party. And I won these by buying overpriced Miller Lights from the Miller girls who were parading around. And every time you bought a case of beer, they'd give you a scratch card. And I told this girl, look, I'm not going to win. Keep it. So she kept it. And then half an hour later, she came up to me saying, look, you've actually won. I scratched it off for you. And you won a ticket to the R. Kelly after party with a plus one. So me and the most devout Catholic you've ever met went to the R. Kelly after party. And R. Kelly pretty much stopped singing, because everyone else was in cool leather jackets. A lot of people had shades on indoors. We were in washed out cotton rugby shorts, flip-flops, and my pink Stade Francais top.
I just apologise for dropping my microphone as you were telling that story. Amazing story. It just sounds like the modern-day equivalent of people in Western movies walking into a saloon bar and everyone's just stopping and turning around and staring. The music comes to a total stop.
Yeah. So, that's how I spent my second test. And also, I mean, we were so smug. We were all watching it. It's kind of like an indoor amphitheatre. It's the only way I can kind of describe it. Like a theatre, but we had these weird sort of curved, I don't know, it has sort of desks like in front of the seats, but is stepped down. And for the whole game, we were basically being very, very bolshy. Not bolshy, that's not a word. Mouthy, I guess. Supporting the Lions, drinking with these South Africans. And then for those 3 minutes, almost every South African in the entire place started standing on the tables, marching up and down. It was devastating.
I've never been to South Africa. Awesome. Though, I'm sure there'll be some people thinking about the Lions tour next year. Touch wood that there are no issues with crowds and gathering and all the rest of it. I'm hopeful on that front. But like you were a young man at the time. You're a slightly older chap, Matt. You're 12 years older than you were, nearly 11 years older than you were. Still a top place to go? Would you think it's a young man's tour or what? What would you say?
Well, me and Phil went at the same time 2 years ago. Mm. So,
of course.
And I went slightly younger, a younger individual. I can tell you right now, it is one of the best countries on earth to go touring. I don't know what New Zealand is like, although I've been to Anglesey, so you know, I can reference it. I've got no idea about Australia. I'm sure it was very nice, but for me, there's something about South Africa where you know it's an enormous country. You know, there's so much to see. There's so much wilderness. There's big cities. There's absolutely everything there. There's wine regions. You can do the grown-up stuff. You can do the children's stuff. You can get eaten by a shark, should you wish. You can do anything you want. It's brilliant.
Plenty of apex predators to get eaten by, actually, in that country.
Loads.
Loads of apex predators.
If you want to find something that will kill you, you don't have to go too far in South Africa.
Ask Scott Baldwin.
Yeah, I would echo everything JB said. I absolutely loved it. The wine regions, the food is sensational, and like the high end stuff and the braai stuff and the meat is just unbelievable. The wildlife stuff, both on the coast and inland and in Kruger and in the other national parks, it's absolutely stunning.
I couldn't recommend Cape Town enough. And Stellenbosch is maybe the most beautiful town I've ever seen.
Franschhoek.
Oh, hang on. Stellenbosch.
In all of the wine regions around there are incredible, but I loved Franschhoek, which is a little French colonial town, wine region. It's a tiny town.
Sorry, I know this is a rugby podcast, but is that the one with the train running up and down it?
There's like little... I think there is a train, actually.
Yeah.
They certainly have little old-style-y bus car type
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, one.
Carts.
Yep. So,
yeah.
Go there, it's amazing. You'll love it. Durban, yeah. Cape Town.
And it's... the rand is one of the few currencies in the world that is still weak against the pound. So yeah.
Put it,
you get a bargain.
Put this way, when we were 21, right, we did things on a budget. It was £7 to the pound, and we lived like kings. When I went there again, a little bit more successful in life, it was £24 or £20 to the pound.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and 20 rand would get you a pint of beer or a very nice glass of wine. And the wine, some of the wine there is sensational. And and for a few, for, I don't know, 50 to 100 rand, you'd get a massive steak. Just awesome. Absolutely awesome.
Yeah. Sorry, go on, JB.
Have we sold it to you yet?
Oh, 100%. I was just going to say, I wonder if the fact that the European Championships is going to be next summer, not at exactly the same time, and the Olympics now is going to be next summer, whether that will affect the number of people and just the whole economy and the fallout from this, and or some people might maybe tentative about travelling. I wonder if at all, that will affect the Lions Tour.
Well, do you know what? I don't think it will affect it much at all. Well, yeah, hang on. Let me just calm down a bit there.
Maybe it'll mean that reporters and stuff and podcasts and stuff will be spread quite thin, and you know,
one
might
of
be some work out there.
One of the things in the commentary, and it always baffles me that they say this, and but they always go, I can't believe it. The crowd is full of red. I was like, well, of course it is. It's a Lions Tour. I mean, always full of red. That's what the Lions do, is it? They show up in your backyard and they fill up your stadium. I think if there's going to be a difference, it might be there's not so much red, but these stadiums will definitely be packed out, because for a lot of people, the Lions coming isn't actually that good a thing. You know, you wait 12 years, the Lions show up, but then, you know, ticket inflation goes through the roof and you can't get any tickets anyway to watch your national team. So it'll be a great opportunity for a lot of people who wouldn't normally see the Lions to watch the Lions. So it'll be good either way.
It's definitely worth going. It's worth any... If you can get to South Africa, go to South Africa. It's superb.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
One more thing for me that I've not mentioned so far. On the Rob Carney try, did you notice the exclamation that Stuart Barnes made about the covering tackler?
No.
He said something on the lines of, Carney's done phenomenally well there because JP Peterson, one of the best tacklers in the world, is coming across to try and stop it.
Yes, I did notice that. I raised my eyebrows. Yes, I did remember him saying that.
I watched a lot of, in fact, between all three of us, we all watch a lot of rugby. Would you all agree with that?
It's a fair, more than the average.
Yes.
I could not put together my definitive list of top five cover tackles. But yeah, Bonds. No,
Sam Underhill's against New Zealand would be on the top five.
Yes.
Yep. No, not cover tacklers.
Cover tacklers.
Yeah, people who's
I mean, Lee Half.
That's a good point.
I've got one Lee Halfpenny. That's it.
Yeah, I'll give you Lee Halfpenny.
Everyone else, they're not known for cover tackling. And I would go one further. JP Peterson is certainly not known.
He's not in the top five, you're saying, JB?
I don't know. He might be. An astonishing piece of analysis by Stuart Bonds, if he knows that. I mean, that's why worth the big bucks.
Absolutely.
There's no way that I would know that, or anyone else in the world. So I guess I
did like Miles Harrison at one point. A description he used of a Mike Phillips run, which I think we might have hinted that Mike Phillips was his man crush, but he said a rugged ball carry from Mike Phillips.
Because I don't like swearing much. He's a dick, but not in a bad way, in the way that you want someone on your team. The more you watch him, I mean, if you try and watch him from a neutral's point of view, this is 12 years down the road, you can just watch it, can't you, as just an impartial observer. He must be the worst player to play against. And I think this sums up, when he's in the corner, him and O'Driscoll, I mean, O'Driscoll's a very nice man, but he's also an incredibly hard man. And then there's Mike Phillips, who's a complete wind-up merchant, and probably pretty hard himself, actually. And that niggle in him, it must drive you insane. And because he's a big guy as well who can carry and shrug people off when they're not expecting it, I can't imagine how irritating he is to play against.
And he was actually the perfect nine to have in this game because it was such a physical game and he was so physical. And there's a number of times where he cleaned up balls that had come loose and then made 5 or 10 yards just because of his strength. But there were also times when some of his passing was so slow and so inaccurate.
Right, thank you for this. So I wanted to... I was thinking this about Mike Phillips, right, which is he was misunderstood. And I'm going to have to sort of have a little think about how I put this. When I watched the Bath-Wigan game, right, something which stood out to me was how fast the nine passed the ball. I don't mean how fast the ball was from floor to the nine's hand to going. I mean, literally, how long that nine must have spent whizzing that ball out. And I think Mike Phillips gets an awful lot of stick for not having a fast pass. But I also think it's one of the most overrated aspects in rugby is having a fast pass. What you want is the ball recycled quickly. And they're not the same thing. I think he did a really good job of recycling the ball quickly without having a lightning fast pass, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. I think some of his distribution was not up to scratch. And there are times when he should have passed off his left hand and he actually turns his whole body to pass off his right hand. And because he's basically facing his own try line, the trajectory of the ball is away from Stephen Jones. So there were times when the whole thing was a bit of a mess. But he still had, even taking into account what I would deem as poor passing overall, he had a great game. I mean, he was the right man to be playing nine in that game.
Has there ever been anyone like him since?
There was always mini Mike Connor Murray, but he's not even...
He's not...
a totally different... Yeah, that was more from he's quite tall and he looks quite handsome.
Yeah, I mean, what was Mike Phillips? 6'3"? Maybe 6'4"?
Something like that, yeah.
Now, allegedly, when he was younger, the problem they had is they couldn't put enough weight on him, which is ridiculous. And he also used to play centre. I watched him playing for Llanelli in the centre.
So he's listed as 6'3 and 101 kg.
Yeah. Now, in his later days in Sale, his issue was he couldn't keep the weight on. So, you know, he would be looking at gaps and running through them, but he wasn't 101 kg in his last few years at Sale. Definitely not. And then he'd get absolutely slammed everywhere.
Yeah, because he's used to hitting the shoulders in the tackle and bouncing off, but not bouncing off.
Yeah, so I guess there is a point there, which is you can only be a physical scrum half for so long. And actually, you can get really far doing it, but it won't last forever.
Was he at Sale at the same time as Stringer?
Of course he was.
What a duo. Is there any ever been a disparity between the quality of the pass between two players?
So Peter Stringer, I honestly believe, could have stayed at Sale for another 2 years. He was that good. He was so good there. And I think he got, I think he, in Minster,
was really good. And then he got a little worse. And then he kind of lost his way a little bit in Newcastle. Maybe didn't have, you know, didn't quite find his feet. Then he went to Saracens and got better. And by the same, he went to Bath. He was amazing. He was reborn in his Premiership years. And then he came to Sale and he was absolutely brilliant. I think it was an injury that did it for him in the end. But yeah, I think that was also a time when Sale didn't have quite the resources that they currently did. And it's a case of, I mean, classic Steve Diamond, get bits and pieces from everywhere. Even if the two pieces look completely different, plug him in a game plan to make sure that you stay up.
There you go, Diamond's mantra.
Everything leads back to Dimes. Well, one thing we've got to mention before we leave this game is the gouging by Scout Berger. Now, it was spotted by the assistant referee. It was not dealt with by a TMO because that wasn't a thing 11 years ago. Referee gave a yellow card, which was lenient, and that's fine. But what I did like is, I was watching it and I wasn't kind of really angry about it. Go on.
But there was a TMO there, right?
No.
There was a TMO to review referees put in touch.
Yeah, oh, yeah, you're right.
I think that point in time it was only for the grounding of the ball for tries, or certainly the scoring of tries. It wasn't for other stuff.
I mean, I need to watch this again, though. I think it's amazing. I'm sure they go to the TMO for this.
For what?
I'm sure they do.
They don't. So it's the touch judge, assistant referee, who says the words he uses to the referee are, and he probably should have been a bit more clear with this, but he says it's contact with the eye, at least a yellow card, is what he says to the referee, which
absolute minimum.
Which feels like a bit of a cop out because it's either gouging or it's not. And if it's gouging, it's a red card. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
Contact with the eyes is a red card. So he's the one that saw it. The ref did not see it. He should have been more clear.
Exactly what my point was going to be. I was going to say that I did quite like how the decision was made, albeit it was the wrong decision. I like that the decision was made. It was referred to a couple of times in commentary, but not in an egregious way, not with replay after replay after replay, and the game just moved on and everyone just dealt with it. I did quite like that element of it. It's kind of the unintended consequences of getting the right decision and having the TMO able to be involved a lot as we have now is that we do have these really long stop downs and it just leads to debates, and social media only exacerbates that, and then it dominates newspaper articles rather than actually focusing on the bit we love, which is the 80 minutes of the game.
Yeah, not only does it bring more continuity to the game, but I felt that it was just the right side of violence. Like, it wasn't too violent. It wasn't fists swinging everywhere. The bit I mentioned before about Mike Phillips, I'm pretty sure there were a few elbows to faces, but nobody died. Now, I don't know how you get that back into the game, or even if you want it back into the game. I'm just saying, when I watched the whole test match, I felt that it was the right side of violence. Not too much, but enough. The violence.
And God, it was exciting.
Yeah.
Even now, even 11 years later, knowing what's happening, knowing exactly how the story's going to go, it was a bloody exciting test match to watch. I loved it.
Bad. I don't really want to see Stall Knight Daniel Rousseau fall over and be separated from his senses. So, yeah, I'd like to see a dust up, but when I think about it, actually, I'm not that bothered that everyone hits lower and harder, and it's equally as ferocious, if not more ferocious now.
Great game, though. Great game.
Wonderful. Yes. Here's a question. Would you rather lose test matches like this, playing in that McGeegan, much more fluid, much more beautiful way, or win the Gatland way? What's more important?
Win at all costs.
Yeah.
Win at all costs. But I still loved how they went about their business.
Yeah, definitely.
But I'd rather lose the McGeegan way 2009 than lose the Woodward way in 2005.
Yes, I think we can all agree on that.
Yes.
It'll never get old. It'll never get old. Alistair Campbell, they took Alistair Campbell as a press secretary.
That's mental, isn't it? Still, to this day, that is the biggest indulgence.
And if it worked, if it had worked, if the Lions had won in 2005, you would have seen every single team up and down the land having a press secretary. But
yeah.
thank goodness for the future of rugby that they didn't win.
Dominic Cummings, scrum coach.
But about like Kellyanne Conway with the England team, Eddie Jones brings her in.
He'd be great. He would be absolutely great.
The new press secretary in the States is amazing.
I've seen her. Yeah, she's got.
She is formidable.
They seem to be going through press secretaries at a rate of knots, I've noticed.
Mm. This new one's a keeper.
Yeah, she's very, very yeah, some very, very nifty highlights. Right, I think if we're talking about 45's press secretaries, I think we're done here.
I think that's a good call. We'll work out what next week's homework is and let you know. At Rugby Podcast on Twitter, JB's at JBeardmore, I'm at Cocker, Phil is lurking. Until the next time, hit subscribe and we'll see you then. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.